Hello, welcome to the Law Report, Damien Carrick with you. Today, tobacco control. It's a battle where Australia is on the front line. 2 years ago, we became the first country in the world to introduce tobacco plain packaging. But we're no longer alone. This week, the UK's House of Lords approved legislation recently passed by the British House of Commons.
We see the introduction of standardised packaging as a unique approach to tackle smoking and its appalling effect on public health. We want to continue our policy action to see smoking rates continue to fall, which is why, once again, I commend these regulations to the House.
Yeah. Earl Howe speaking in the House of Lords. The UK is in fact the second European domino to fall. 2 weeks ago, Ireland set the pace.
Ireland has become the first country in Europe to pass plain packaging laws for cigarettes. Minister James Riley said the measure would protect children from ever taking up smoking. But the company, which owns brands such as Silkcut and Benson & Hedges, has said it will take court action if it proceeds.
We fully expect once the legislation has been enacted and commenced that they will probably file a lawsuit. They do this more, I think, in hope than certainty. They do it to try and intimidate us and thus intimidate other countries.
James Riley there, the minister responsible for the Irish legislation. Tobacco plain packaging will be introduced in both Ireland and the UK in May 2016. Developments in both countries could prove to be an important international tipping point. A number of their European neighbours, including France, are now edging in the same direction. Australia, of course, was first out of the starting box back in 2012, and since, we've been a legal laboratory of sorts. The world has been watching closely to see how we withstand the legal challenges mounted by Big Tobacco. In the process, we've been learning valuable lessons about what strategies work best in fending off Big Tobacco's counterattacks. We are now sharing those lessons with countries which don't have our considerable resources. Jonathan Liberman is director of the McCabe Centre for Law and Cancer in Melbourne. With financial support from the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade and also the Cancer Council of Australia, the centre runs a 3-week intensive legal training course which deals with a range of issues around cancer, including access to treatment and pain relief. But a big focus is cancer prevention and also the complex relationships between health, trade and investment laws. I spoke with Jonathan and a number of the visiting public health experts at the offices of the Cancer Council of Victoria.
What we do in the training here is we bring people together from around the world. So we have participants from the Asia Pacific, from Latin America and Africa, and we share experiences from those countries but also the lessons from the Australian experience, and plain packaging having been challenged in our High Court and now still being the subject of legal challenges internationally, both in the World Trade Organization and under a bilateral investment treaty. There are a lot of learnings from having to go through that process that we're able to share with people from other countries who, as you said, most of whom don't have the same kind of resources and legal expertise to be able to defend themselves against the tobacco industry's tactics.
Let's talk through the actions against Australia in light of the implementation of plain packaging, which I think became law at the end of 2012. There was, of course, a High Court challenge by Big Tobacco. That failed, didn't it?
Yeah, the four major multinationals operating in Australia claimed that plain packaging was an acquisition of property under the Australian Constitution and that therefore the Australian government should have paid compensation to them. The case was dismissed with costs against the industry. It was the outcome that everyone was expecting. So the High Court held that this was just regulation of property rather than in any acquisition of property by the government.
Now, there are two other actions in international forums where Big Tobacco is trying to stop or reverse plain packaging. One of them is in the World Trade Organization, and I think about five developing countries who are tobacco producers are taking us to that forum. What's going on there?
So five countries, Ukraine, Cuba, Dominican Republic, Honduras and Indonesia, have brought dispute settlement proceedings against Australia, claiming that plain packaging is in breach of Australia's obligations under the World Trade Organization agreements. The Australian government is defending those claims vigorously. The overwhelming expectation is that the Australian government will win those cases, that there are no breaches of World Trade Organization agreements. These are just measures that countries are able to take to protect public health. The tobacco industry is very closely involved in those cases, and you can see a strategy that's been playing out over a number of years now where the industry claims all sorts of things are in violation of both domestic and international laws, tries to increase the costs to governments of introducing tobacco control measures and tries to dissuade, threaten other countries that are considering doing it. So there's an incentive to drag these cases on for as long as possible.
I saw one statement issued by the Dominican Republic government when Cuba joined the band of countries that said, quote, "We welcome Cuba's decision to join the list of developing countries that are fighting for the livelihoods of hundreds of thousands of tobacco workers." Marginal people living marginal lives in the third world sounds kind of, at first brush, it sounds like a worthwhile campaign. But is that the way you see it?
Well, it's a product that WHO estimates kills around 6 million people a year, most of whom are in developing countries. There's a convenient effort by the industry to frame this as sort of developing countries against developed country. That's really a nonsense. The multinational tobacco industries are the ones who are really behind the challenges. The markets that they want to exploit are in developing countries, the countries that can least afford the social, economic costs of tobacco use and tobacco-related death and disease.
It's interesting that you say that because Australia is a tiny percentage of the world market for tobacco, and really it could be said the fight is about trying to delay or make look as though it isn't viable to follow Australia's lead. That's really part of the big strategy here, isn't it?
Yeah, we work with a number of developing countries who are trying to implement tobacco control measures and are on the end of these threats from the multinational tobacco companies and their major law firms, you know, who write letters and make submissions that are nonsense and that they know are nonsense.
Now, we've talked about the High Court challenge to tobacco plain packaging in Australia. We've talked about the WTO, the World Trade Organization, action by five countries. I think it's Cuba, Ukraine, Dominican Republic, Honduras and Indonesia. There's also, bubbling along, a dispute between Philip Morris and Australia brought under investor-state dispute settlement mechanisms, which we have with Hong Kong. What is that dispute, which is quite separate from the WTO dispute?
Yeah, so the Philip Morris International Group of Companies is challenging plain packaging under this bilateral investment treaty between Australia and Hong Kong. It's a 1993 investment treaty. The tobacco industry claims that plain packaging, among other things, expropriates their property and is therefore in breach of that treaty. The case is at a point of discussing jurisdiction. So the Australian government is arguing that the case should be thrown out on the basis that Philip Morris restructured after the government had announced that it was going to introduce plain packaging in order to make use of this bilateral investment treaty. So Philip Morris Asia, based in Hong Kong, bought into the Australian company after plain packaging had been announced and before the legislation was enacted, and then claimed that plain packaging breached their rights under the agreement.
Do you think ultimately it will be resolved in favour of Australia?
The overwhelming consensus is that Australia will win the case, either on the grounds of it being an abuse of right, so you ought not be able to restructure your company in order to sue a government that introduces legislation. And so we're waiting to hear whether it gets thrown out on that basis or not. And I think on the fundamental substantive issues, again, most people think that a tribunal would regard Australia's plain packaging measures or plain packaging measures introduced by other countries as a legitimate exercise of the sovereign power to regulate in the public interest, protection of public health, rather than an expropriation of the tobacco industry's property.
Jonathan Liberman, director of the McCabe Centre for Law and Cancer, a joint initiative of the Cancer Council of Victoria and also the Union for International Cancer Control. Its mission is to contribute to the effective use of the law for cancer prevention, treatment, supportive care and research. I'm Damien Carrick and you're listening to The Law Report, broadcast on ABC RN, Radio Australia and ABC News Radio. Also available, of course, as a podcast from iTunes or from our website. Now, it isn't just well-resourced developed countries like Australia, Ireland and the UK that are taking on the tobacco industry. India, on the 1st of April, will significantly ramp up health warnings on tobacco packaging. Amit Yadav is a legal consultant with the Public Health Foundation of India. He was in Melbourne for the McCabe Centre training program. Amit says tobacco use, especially chewing tobacco as opposed to cigarette smoking, is very high in India.
If you talk about smoking, it is around 14%, but if you say tobacco use, it is 35%. So 48% of males use tobacco in India and around 20% of women use tobacco in India.
The Prime Minister wants to increase tobacco warnings on packages. It'll increase from covering about 40% of the packaging to about 85% of the packaging. Where are we at with those laws?
Currently, the pictorial health warnings are 40% on the one side, effectively 20% on the principal display area of the pack. But the proposed regulation will have 85% on the both side of cigarette packs and in terms of 85% area of principal display area of all tobacco products. And in that 85%, 60% is supposed to be the graphic images and 25% is going to be text warnings of, like, in terms of health messages. And the government has notified those warnings 5 months back and they will come into effect from 1st of April 2015.
And has there been a lot of pushback from Big Tobacco on the passing of those laws?
Of course, yes. You take any tobacco control measure, it is not gone without a challenge from the tobacco industry. So they are already writing to all the departments, including health department and trade and commerce departments, and submitting their representation saying that the law is excessive and it's not required and excessive measure in terms of protecting health and it is not necessary to do it. So the tobacco industry always do that.
Have there been court challenges?
It's interesting to see because what happened is in India got pictorial warnings through a court order in 2009. Effectively, that court case which is there on pictorial health warning is still on in the Supreme Court, and it was through an interim order of the Supreme Court that the pictorial warnings were there. So there's no point having a new case in terms of there's no fresh litigation maybe, but the industry might want to bring that same matter before the court again and say that in this matter the government is doing something else and we don't want the government to do that. But one of the industry tactics is to really wait for just at the last moment to go to the court. So if it comes on the 1st of April, I think we should wait till the last week of March when we hear from the industry through a court. They know that they are not going to win, but that's the delay is one of the things that they would want. Generally, that's the industry tactics whenever there is a change or a modification in pictorial warnings.
I understand even though there are restrictions on advertising, there's a lot of something called brand stretching. What is brand stretching?
Brand stretching, like otherwise known as brand extension, same brand product, different kinds of product, like a tobacco industry having a brand registered as tobacco product and using the similar brand name or brand extension for other products. So it could be on, so a tobacco product as the same name used for cosmetic product, clothing range, same name used for waters or same name used for any other product. So you have a similar tobacco product and a non-tobacco product. So the advertisement restriction is on the tobacco and not on the non-tobacco. So you advertise the non-tobacco one effectively in terms of advertising the tobacco product as well.
So it's a way of making the logo, the brand, visible and circumventing the restrictions on the sale of tobacco or the restrictions around the sale of tobacco?
Yes. So we call it surrogate advertisement through brand extensions. So you use the same brand, same color, same design, same patterns, and then you advertise those, and you just, you know, in terms of paint the whole town on that color, and then you see that people are like always reminded of the brand that they are using, of tobacco and not. At times you would see that the non-tobacco brand, which is being the brand extension version, you would not find that product at all in the market, because people will remember the name, and if you ask for that name and you get the tobacco version and not the non-tobacco one. Yeah.
Gee, so sometimes it's even a sham. Those other products aren't even really there.
Yeah, so that happens at times.
India, I believe, has the world's biggest film industry. And I know in Hollywood for a long time there was there still is, huge issues around product placement of cigarettes. Does that happen in India?
Till 2003, when we actually got our tobacco control law, till that time the brand placement was very evident and very openly done in the films. After 2003, but when we got our law, there was a little in terms of reduction in brand placement, but then that continued in terms of product placement. I would not say the brands were visible very much. They were there in terms of as a violations, but the product placement was there in terms of immensely, and mentioning of product names and brands, that was going on. But in 2006, government came up with the regulation in terms of prohibiting use and display of tobacco scenes in the movies and televisions. Then the industry went to the court, and there was a lot of like huge battle. And in 2011, when the government promised a Supreme Court directive, and then they came up and said that you cannot display tobacco product on scene, and in any movie which has tobacco scene in a movie have to have a disclaimer before the movie starts and during the intervals, and whenever there is a scene in the movie, you have to have a health warning scroll during that time.
It's interesting because I've never seen an English language film where you have those kinds of health warnings scrolling down a screen when a cigarette appears.
So it appears in India now, even if it is a foreign channel, you will see those warnings if there is a smoking scene. And even when there is a foreign movie released, so if it is a Hollywood movie which is released in India, they will have to edit in terms of modify their screens and have those scrolls in Indian theaters. There are, in terms of challenges in that as well, one of the Hollywood directors refused to release his movie, claiming that it violates his creative rights, which is could be a like very lame argument from him, because there's hundreds of Hollywood movies released every month, and all of them not, like currently comply with the regulations, and it's easy, and it doesn't affect their creativity at all. It's just the plain simple message about the harmful effect of those products.
So India is actually a world leader in this regard.
I think so, because I haven't heard any country having such kind of strong regulatory measures for films and television programs. It's not only on films, it's on television programs and any film and television program which is certified by the Central Film Board in India.
Amit Yadav, a legal consultant with the Public Health Foundation of India. The Philippines also has very high rates of smoking. Avita Mariz-Ricafort is a legal consultant with the National Tobacco Control Coordinating Office, part of the Philippines Department of Health.
Around 31% of the Filipino population, that's 47% for males and 9% for women.
A very high figure.
Yes, very high figure.
Now, in 2013, the Philippines introduced something called the Sin Tax Law, which, as I understand it, drastically increased the tax on both cigarettes and, I think, spirits. What did that do to the price of cigarettes?
Definitely jacked up the prices of cigarettes, and we expect to see that increasing yearly. But the Sin Tax Law can definitely be amended to pull it up even higher, because as it is, the prices are still low as compared with other countries.
In the lead-up to the passing of the Sin Tax legislation, there was a very strong campaign to stop the laws. Can you tell me about that campaign?
It was a very interesting time for Congress, and both the public health advocates and the tobacco industry really battled it on for that legislation. On our way to the Senate to attend the Sin Tax hearings, we saw truckloads of farmers being herded on the quadrangle outside the Senate, and they were holding up tarpaulins, posters saying that tobacco is life and why are you doing this to us? And of course, you can see that they were herded into that area because they were wearing the same shirts, and they had packed lunches prepared with them. And also during the deliberations, the media caught a lawyer of Philip Morris directly whispering to the senator who was about to speak at the Senate floor. We also had a senator who had a version of the syntax measure that was almost lifted verbatim from the version that was submitted by Philip Morris to the Senate. So that's how difficult it was for public health to ensure that the syntax bill would be protected from the tobacco industry's influence.
Now, the Philippines does have laws at the moment around smoking in public places, and there certainly have been challenges which have even made it to the media here in Australia. Can you tell me about those laws and those challenges and, I guess, who's been behind them?
I think that was around 2012, I think, that the Metropolitan Manila Development Authority, or the MMDA, it's a government agency that assists the local government units in Manila to implement or enforce smoke-free measures. And a few years back, they intensified this campaign of apprehending violators in public terminals, public facilities. And
so the things like train stations, bus stations.
Yes, there's a smoking ban, absolute smoking ban in playgrounds, schools, things like that. So a few years back, there were two men who were apprehended for smoking in a bus terminal. They ended up filing a case against the government, saying that the MMDA went beyond its power in implementing the law. In the early stages of that case, actually, the men came out on TV admitting that they were promised payment in exchange for filing the case, and they were actually former security guards of Philip Morris. And they were coming out on TV because they weren't paid what they were promised. Right after that media interview came out, we tried to look for them. But the very next day, a lawyer filed an affidavit saying that the witness was recanting the statements that he made in media, that he was just confused because his neighbors were looking at him and he was being interviewed by media. So we haven't been able to locate him since.
Very interesting. These people were mounting a campaign and appealing against these laws on the basis of, quote, equal enjoyment of the right to smoke. It's an interesting one. These people were clearly people of limited means, yes. So they were getting the money from somewhere to mount this challenge.
Yes, and when we looked at the website of the law firm that was handling this case, Philip Morris was listed as one of the clients, so you can just, connect the dots.
What other strategies does Big Tobacco engage in the Philippines, which you would say maybe makes it difficult for the implementation of health controls?
Apart from directly lobbying in the Senate and Congress against these tobacco control measures, I think the form of interference that makes it most difficult for us is definitely litigation. We also have a case filed against the implementing rules of the Food and Drug Administration Act of the Philippines. So since 2011, we've had this stronger FDA enforcement or implementation of tobacco control, but the FDA hasn't been able to move because of this case. It's also in the Supreme Court. We have a case filed against the outdoor advertising ban filed by a number of tobacco companies that's been pending since 2007.
Challenging a ban on billboards and things like that.
Actually, they were seeking a declaratory judgment from the court. They wanted a confirmation that even if there's an outdoor advertising ban, they can still put up billboards outside retail stores. They were pushing for an expanded interpretation of the law. But of course, obviously, it was intended to be allowing them only to put up advertisements inside the four walls of retail store. But what they wanted was for them to be allowed to put up billboards as long as it's on the tract of land wherein the retail establishment is located.
So on the giant wall of the shopping mall or the retail outlet.
Mm-hmm, yes, yes. They argued that that would be allowed even if we had the outdoor advertising ban.
But so far that hasn't succeeded.
In that case, it's still pending in the Supreme Court, I think, in the Court of Appeals.
Legal consultant Evita Mariz-Ricafort, who works with the Philippine Department of Health. Another country with a high prevalence of smoking, but even fewer resources to combat its effects, is Papua New Guinea. Vicky Wari is the non-communicable diseases coordinator with the PNG Department of Health. She says nearly 44% of adults smoke.
We have measures that prohibit advertising in the country. We really don't have any advertising at the moment.
Do you know how dependent PNG is on the excise taxes collected on smoking on cigarettes?
Currently, we have the excise tax is around 37%. Late last year, we made a submission for an increase of tobacco tax. In November last year, when the government handed down the budget for this year, there was this news article that the tobacco tax would increase by 5% every month, but we have not got any formal notice about this. But you look at the tax, really, it goes back to the government. So we don't have much control over the tobacco tax. We're not getting anything back to the department.
The tax doesn't go back into the health budget?
Not specifically, because we have the tax that goes in the consolidated revenue for the government. It does not come back because I think we don't have a mechanism in place. We are actually working towards it. We'll be also working on our regulation, and we are preparing now for another submission to ask for a certain percentage of the tobacco tax to come back for the tobacco control fund.
And again, difficult in a poor country to grab those public resources when there are so many competing needs.
Oh yeah, well, for PNG we have like problem with tobacco. At the same time, you'd also be seeing the other problems like communicable diseases on the rise. The government has its own priorities, and you're looking at health department, we also have, you know, certain priorities. Tobacco control in terms of non-communicable disease, it's not really given a very high priority, so that you would see that the distribution of resources is not equally distributed. But I think once we get ourselves organized, we'll be able to, you know, make sure that resources are pulled towards implementation, enforcement of tobacco control.
Do you have graphic health warnings in PNG?
We currently don't have that. We have the text health messages. We're working towards that.
Do you get a sense that big tobacco are fighting back?
Yes. We've learned from others, and when we were reviewing our current legislation, we do have some negative comments from the industries, not through codes, but there have been phone calls, there have been emails, there have been confrontation that, oh, what you're doing is not right. We have this, and you must understand that we are members to WTO, and that if anything, there might be lawsuits. So these are the conversations they have been having with us, but we have not given up. We are doing what we think is right.
There is reference to the action against Australia in the YTO. People are saying to you, look out, because you might find yourself in the same boat and you can afford it a lot less than Australia.
Yeah, we have the industries coming up, and they sometimes tell us that what you do, you got to be careful. You see, if you're thinking of, you know, graphic health warning, you're thinking of plain packaging, you remember that Australia has not gone through the case. So, you know, this was some of the informal conversation, I would say, they have been having with me over the phone, even person. They come into the office and talk about all these things. But yeah, we can imagine how big it would be and how much it's going to cost the country if we're going through this. And for PNG, I don't know whether we would be able to tackle that.
Whether you'd be able to withstand the pressure and whether you'd be able to afford, choose to allocate the resources to stand up on this issue.
This is a big question. I don't think we will be able to do that.
Vicky Worry, the Non-Communicable Diseases Coordinator with the PNG Department of Health, who has been attending the McCabe Centre for Law and Cancer's intensive legal training course. It is expected that Australia will ultimately win the dispute in the World Trade Organisation and also its dispute with Philip Morris under the Hong Kong-Australia Bilateral Investment Treaty. Perhaps at that point, countries with far fewer resources, places like PNG, will have fewer fears about implementing tobacco control measures. That's the Law Report for this week. A big thanks to producer Anita Barrow and also to audio producer John Jacobs. Do visit our website. There you'll find audio on demand, transcripts and podcasts. Talk to you next week with more Law.